I'm Mark Gerson, and I'm the rabbi's husband. And on this show, I hope to demonstrate how exhilarating, how accessible, and how simply helpful the Torah is to everyone. Now, as the rabbi's husband, I get to have conversations like we're going to have today all the time because I'm married to a rabbi. So I am blessed in so many ways, one of which is that the theme of our home is the Torah. And we see every day just how it influences and, in fact, defines all the time life. And so today we're going to explore that with regards to one passage. And I am delighted today to be joined by the renowned biblical scholar, Bible teacher, and pastor, Tim Mackey. Tim, who has a PhD in Hebrew and Jewish studies, is the chief education officer of the Bible Project and is the host of the spectacular podcast, Exploring My Strange Bible. Tim, welcome to The Rabbi's Husband.
Hey, Mark. Good to talk with you.
So how did you go from being a young Christian skateboarder to becoming one of America's preeminent Bible teachers, a great pastor, and a scholar of all things Jewish?
Well, life is full of strange twists and turns that on my better days, I trust is all in God's providence.
So you were involved in like a skateboarding ministry?
Yeah, totally. That's right. Yeah. So I started following Jesus because of an outreach ministry to skateboarders in Portland. It was very simple and raw and real. And that's where I first was captivated by the person of Jesus of Nazareth and his teachings. And it was a really tight-knit community, too. So these were the first Christian peers I had ever been around that were people that actually remotely resembled a way of life that I thought was interesting or cool or compelling. And it was a community that really valued reading the whole Bible.
Wow.
As a way to understand how we follow Jesus. And it was just like a normal part. And I didn't know any different because it was where I was learning to follow Jesus. And so listening to Leviticus while you like build a ramp and then like going out, you know, for a milkshake and talking about Leviticus, that was just, this was all happening in the first years of my being a Christian. And I loved it. I'm so grateful for it. So I had three other friends who we signed up for classes at a Bible college across the street from that skate park ministry. And within a couple of years, we were all learning Greek and then Hebrew together. And it was just a really tight-knit community of learning. And there you go.
And now you're one of the great Bible teachers in America. God certainly has his hand in so many ways that we cannot foresee at the time. I'm sure when you were skateboarding at age 19 or 20, you didn't know where you'd be at this point.
Yep. And I still don't know where I'll be. You know, it's just been one twist and turn, as I said, after another. But I'm really grateful that, man, I've been able to dedicate most of my adult years to studying the scriptures and helping other people see how amazing they are. This kind of conversation that we're about to have is my idea of a very, very good time.
Awesome. So the particular passage we're going to discuss is one of the greats. This is Genesis 38, the story of Judah and Tamar. So Tim, tell us what happens in the story and why it's significant to you.
Yes. I love particularly taking the most scandalous, potentially offensive, and bizarre stories in the Bible and seeing what's amazing about them. And this is a really prime example. It's not the first sex scandal in the book of Genesis, but it's one of the whoppers. We're in Genesis 38. We're one of the sons of Jacob, who's the grandson of the great Abraham. Excuse me, he's the great-grandson of Abraham. And he goes down to a Canaanite town. And he finds a Canaanite woman there that he wants to marry, and so he does. So he has three children, and then he finds a wife for his firstborn son. His firstborn son then dies soon after getting married, we're not told. And so he tells his other sons to, you know, take the widow as a new wife. This was a cultural practice that they had. And his brothers refuse to perform their duties as brothers-in-law of their dead brother to raise up his name. And so God puts the second born of Judah to death. So Judah is really scared that his third and final son is going to die. And so he says to Tamar, his now widowed daughter-in-law, hey, why don't you go back to your dad's house and wait till my third son grows up, and then you can marry him when he's old enough. But then he, like, you know, gives her the silent treatment and never gets back to her. So Tamar, who's the widow, daughter-in-law of Judah. This is a complicated story. It's hard to tell quickly. She sees that Judah has deceived her and is being dishonest and is never actually going to let her marry his third son. And so she disguises herself as a prostitute. She dons a disguise and deceives him to sleep with her. And in order to get leverage on him, she asks for basically his wallet, credit card, and ID. She says, "What's the pledge that you're going to pay me?" And he's like, "Oh, I'll give you a goat." "Well, how do I know you're going to give me a goat?" And so Tamar says, "Give me your wallet, credit card, and ID." And so she takes that, has sex with her father-in-law, and then gets pregnant eventually and then goes away. And then Judah comes to, pay, and she's gone. Nobody can find her. And so when it comes public knowledge that Judah's daughter-in-law is pregnant, he demands, according to cultural custom, I suppose, or just selfish desire, to do an honor killing. She should be burned in public. And she comes out and says, the guy whose baby is in my womb, has this ID and this credit card. And then Judah says, "This woman is more righteous than I am." And then Tamar has twins in her womb, actually. That is the bizarre story of Genesis 38.
So this is really the story of Judah taking responsibility for what he did after Tamar refuses, even at risk of death, to publicly embarrass another person.
Correct. I mean, there's many layers to what's going on here. She puts herself in a very vulnerable position in order to save the family lineage that Judah, through cowardice, fear, and deceit, was not going to save.
So what about this incredible story is most meaningful to you and most instructive for us?
Yeah, okay. Well, I think first, I have fallen in love with the literary artistry of ancient Jewish literature and biblical literature. And so this story, where it's placed in its bigger context, is crucially significant to understanding its meaning. So this story comes right in between the story of Joseph and his brothers, which is a much more famous and maybe easier to understand story in Genesis.
Right. It's almost like Judah goes into self-declared exile after he saw what his brothers did to Joseph when they threw him in the pit and left him for dead.
That's right. So in the previous story, Joseph, Judah's brother, younger brother, had dreams that he was going to become the king of the world and king of the family, and the brothers hated him for it. And so the brothers are going to kill him. The older brothers, Reuben and Judah, want to save Joseph, but in kind of a weird way, Judah's way of saving his brother is to propose selling him as a slave. And then what happens is that the brothers, after they sell their brother as a slave, they kill a goat and then they dip their brother's coat in blood and send it to their father and say, "Recognize this." And he says, "Oh no, a wild animal's eaten my son. There's blood on the coat." And so they successfully deceive their father. And then the last line of that chapter is, "And Joseph went down to Egypt." And then right after that line comes this story right here. So what's fascinating is that we have two stories of deception right next to each other. And this, it's a great example of how the biblical authors put two stories next to each other that at first you think, what is the connection between these two? But in fact, there's a deep, deep connection. What happens with Judah and Tamar is previewing for the reader everything that is about to happen in the Joseph story to follow.
That's right, because the story of Judah and Tamar is really an interruption in the narrative of Joseph.
It feels like an interruption, but it's sort of like conspicuous by that fact.
Right, because it feels like we go from Joseph 1 to Tamar and Judah, which has nothing to do with what follows, and then to Joseph 2.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's a wonderful, this is actually a technique the Coen brothers, well-known filmmakers.
Oh, interesting. Really?
Yeah. They'll put a scene and then they'll have some scene that immediately follows that you're like, what did that have to do with anything? And you have to watch the movie 5 times and then you're like, I get it now. Those guys were raised on the Bible
right.
and they get it. So the way of thinking about the story of Judah and Tamar is that it begins with the death of two sons. Judah goes down into the land of Canaan through a marriage to a Canaanite, which is not awesome.
It's completely prohibited.
Totally, that's right.
Yeah.
When I guess it would be Judah's uncle, Esau, went and married outside of the family lineage, his parents were super bummed.
Right.
And so that's what Judah's doing. He has these sons, and then there's the death of two sons. And so the whole thing is about the future of the lineage of Judah, because it's in jeopardy right now. That's how the story begins. The story is going to end with two sons being born. So the full redemption, as it were, or the reversal of the death of those two sons. So this is a story about the lineage of Judah goes from death to new birth. How do we get there? Well, it's not because of the faithfulness or integrity of Judah himself. The whole story is about his, you know, his selfish sons who won't fulfill their familial duties to their widowed brother and their sister-in-law, Tamar. And so what ends up happening is that this woman risks her public status, she risks her reputation, she risks her life and safety in order to save the family line of her father-in-law. And so it's this amazing, actually, story about that fits into a motif that's going to go right through the Hebrew Bible of the righteous Gentiles, as it were.
That's right.
And of these crazy moments in Israel's history where the hero or the heroine of the story is a non-Israelite who becomes a model to the Israelites of what true trust and faith in God is.
Well, so I would put in that category Melchizedek,
yep,
who comes to Abraham and sets him straight when he's about to make a deal with the king of Sodom. You put in that category Yitro,
yep,
who sets Moses straight. You put in that category Caleb, the son of Jephunneh the Kenizzite. So very interesting about tomorrow.
Yes, and actually most important in that connection is the story of Ruth. The story of Ruth actually has been modeled and is riddled through with hyperlinks and little echoes of the story of Judah and Tamar.
Oh, very interesting.
Another righteous Gentile who saves the lineage of an Israelite family.
And it's through the witness of Tamar. Tamar taught us, and this became an extraordinarily important concept in Judaism, about how you never publicly embarrass anybody.
Ah, okay.
The Talmud says you should first go through the furnace of fire rather than publicly embarrass somebody. And that comes from Tamar because she's willing to risk her life rather than publicly embarrass this guy who's exactly what you said. Judah seems to be going through some kind of midlife crisis.
Clearly, totally. It's true. I mean, he's willing. He's essentially volunteering for ID theft. You know what I'm saying? And because he wants to sleep with this woman so badly, and that's not a positive, you know, portrayal, you know, of his moral character.
But then she inspires him, and he immediately transforms himself.
That's right.
And he takes full responsibility for his action, and allows that responsibility to make himself a different and better person, and allow the Jewish story to continue.
Yes. Okay. So actually in two ways, that's crucial. So in the scene where he says, you know, take her out, let her be burned. And then she, you know, brings out his ID. And what she says is, recognize these.
Right.
Now, just quick note, that's exactly the same phrase, literally in Hebrew, copy and paste, of what the brothers said to Jacob in the previous story when they brought him the bloody cloak. Recognize this.
Oh, very interesting.
But what she says is, recognize this. And Judah recognizes. And instead of trying to cover up, he goes public and he's very open about his failure. And he says, she is more righteous than me.
Right.
Many English readers don't quite know the nuances of the Hebrew words of tzedek or tzedakah here. But she is more in the right than I am. She was doing right by the family more than I was. That's what he means. Which is a remarkable confession. To me, that's actually the heartbeat of it, is that God often uses the most unlikely people and situations to turn the folly of his own people into his good purposes.
Well, and it also shows so well just what you said, and I write about this in my book on the Haggadah, that like, why is the guest at the Seder who often makes the most enlightening comments, has the most instructive insights, and really educates the Jew about how magnificent his experience is, it's the Gentile.
Yeah, that's right.
And we see over and over again, as you point out in the Bible, that it's the Gentile who makes the Jew a better Jew. And this is exactly, as you point out, this is what Judah says. She is more righteous than me. In other words, she's made me a better Jew.
Yeah, that's well said. Okay, that's the shape of the Judah and Tamar story. So what's amazing is we just read a story about children who deceive their parents.
Right.
The brothers of Joseph deceived their father to cover up their, so to speak, murder or sale of their brother into slavery. But ironically, it's going to be that sale of their brother into slavery that's going to save all of them, which is what Joseph will say to his brothers at the end of the book of Genesis, is my brothers planned this for evil, but God planned it for good. But how does Joseph work with his brothers once they come visit him? He disguises himself in exactly the same language that's used to describe how Tamar disguises herself.
Right.
And Joseph deceives his brothers. He actually tricks them with this cup business and the stolen cup. And what he makes his brothers and his father do is give up the other beloved son, which is Joseph's brother. So Jacob has to lose two of his sons. First Joseph, then he has to give up Benjamin through Joseph's deception. And it all comes to a climax with the character of Judah.
He's the hero of the later Joseph story.
That's exactly right. In other words, when you meet Judah in the sale of Joseph into slavery, he wants to save his brother from being murdered, but his alternative is to sell our brother into slavery. So you walk away from that story going, Judah's, I guess, a little better, but it's not that great of a guy. Then you read Genesis 38 and you're like, who is this guy? And then it's only through what after Tamar's deception, or rather her counter-deception, he deceives her, she counter-deceives. So Joseph is going to counter the deception of his brothers with a counter-deception. And then who is it that ends up making this long speech before Joseph? It's Judah, his brother. And what his brother Judah says is, listen, you're right, the stolen cup, you want to keep the brothers here in slavery. And what Judah does is he offers his own life in the place of his brothers. He says, take me as a slave. And what he says is, take me as a down payment. It's exactly the same word of what Tamar said, give me a down payment. What's the pledge?
Fascinating. So what you're saying is that what Judah learns from Tamar is what enables the brothers to reconcile and the Jewish story to continue.
That's exactly right, yes.
And even further, on Jacob's deathbed, when he's given the opportunity to evaluate the life and future projected legacy of all of his children, his favorite, the one who he wants to really carry on the Jewish tradition, is Judah.
Yep, becomes a line of kingship. And so it all comes back to Tamar. Tamar's actions, the impact they have on Judah, compels Judah to then go sacrifice his well-being and make himself vulnerable to give up his life and offer it for his brother. Joseph sees that and is like, this is a different Judah. And then that's like why it is Judah become the privileged line that will become the origins of the kingship of David, of the Messiah. It all comes back to the valiant courage of Tamar. Isn't that amazing?
Beautiful. Absolutely. Amazing. Yeah. Yeah. I'm thinking I want to tell my wife to have, we should have a third daughter and name her Tamar. That's
So there's multiple things going on here, but another one is those words that Joseph says, y'all planned it for Ra, for evil, or bad, but God planned it for Tov. But God's planning it for Tov. God's taking what stupid selfish humans do and transforming it into Tov happens precisely through the faithfulness of these very unlikely people like the Canaanite Tamar. And that's going to be a motif. I mean, think through the story of Ruth and then, of course, into the New Testament with the story of Mary, Miriam, and so on. But so these are really core themes to the storyline of the whole Bible. And it comes out of this story that's so surprising when you first read it.
Well, Tim, what a magnificent discussion of this fascinating story. So thank you so much for that. Now, the third part of The Rabbi's Husband always goes from one text, which is the sacred text of the Bible, to another text, which is André Malraux's 1968 book, Anti-Memoir. And he tells a story. He said, I just ran into a man with whom I served in the war, and this man had become a parish priest. So I said to the priest, in all of your years of hearing confessions, what are two things that you've learned about mankind? And the priest said, one, he said, everyone is much less happy than he seems. And two, there's no such thing as a grown-up person. So, Tim, in the decades that have constituted your ministry to date and your great Bible teaching, your great Bible leadership, your career as a pastor, the journey that you've had to get to where you are now, what are two things that you've learned about humankind?
As I enter my own middle age, probably maybe the same age as Judah in the story, I continue to be surprised at the flaws in my character and how they persist over time.
Wow.
Despite my best effort, you know, you could ask my wife, she would be the expert. I think the gap's closing, you know, between reality and who I hope to become. You know, there are just some patterns of thinking and a behavior that are so woven in, you know, from nature and nurture and all those complex things that I wish I was more like Jesus. And the fact that I'm not more like him keeps becoming more and more difficult for me to understand why some things are so hard to change in my character. So that's the first thing. The other thing is that I continue to be amazed at the portrait of God in the story of Jesus and in the story of the Hebrew Bible, and that he's really merciful, and he works with humans as he finds them, and he is able to work in and through and despite the flaws of his people. And so that's kind of a pair to my first reflection, is that humans are also a lot more glorious and capable of incredible things than we might be willing to imagine, given our knowledge of human nature.
Well, let me just go to your first point for a moment. So actually, Jewish teaching has something to say about that. Maimonides was asked, I'm going to give X to charity. Should I give X once a year, or should I give 1/365th X every day? And he said, without a doubt, do the latter, because if you do something every day, it'll make you that thing. In other words, he said, give to charity every day, because then you'll become a giver by the end. So Judaism teaches that if you want to become another person, or if you want to adapt or adopt another characteristic towards becoming a different kind of person, then don't think about it. Don't plunge the depths of your childhood. Just do the act for 66 days. And at the end of 66 days, people will say, wow, he is that kind of person. And modern science, interestingly, has run the same experiment and has concluded it's not 66 days, it's 90 days.
Interesting. Yeah.
So the bid ask is 2 to 3 months.
That's right. Yeah, that's good. Thank you, Mark. I needed that reminder today. I appreciate that.
Well, thank you for such a fascinating conversation. I have been such a fan of your podcast, where you just bring the Bible to life. I mean, and you do it with so many different aspects of the Bible, so many different books of the Bible. I mean, it's just incredible how much you do and how well you do everything you do. And it's so thank you for all the teaching that you've given me. And thank you for such a terrific appearance on The Rabbi's Husband.
Yeah, totally. Yeah, you're really welcome. I feel like I'm just the messenger. These texts and the God and the person to whom they point is the real star of the show. And it's a privilege to get to talk about this stuff.
Thank you, Tim. Thanks so much. Well, what a terrific discussion of Judah and Tamar, one of the canonical stories of the Bible, right there in mid to late Genesis. And Tim Mackey, as he does so magnificently on his podcast, Exploring My Strange Bible, brings this story to life for us, and particularly really shows how it ties the two Joseph narratives together and makes sense of the whole thing, and explains how Judah transforms himself and becomes the progenitor of the leader of the Jewish people. So thank you, Tim, for such a great discussion. Thank you all for listening. And next year in Graceland. I'm Mark Gerson, and this has been The Rabbi's Husband. And thank you for listening. Please go to Apple, to Spotify, to wherever you receive podcasts, rate, review, and subscribe. I can be found at therabbishusband.com or at The Rabbi's Husband on Facebook or Instagram. And I would love to hear from you. So please email me at mark@therabbishusband.com. This podcast is part of the Joshua Network. You can find out more about the Joshua Network at thejoshuanetwork.com. Thank you for listening.